The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Well, now, with Daffodil Day coming next week, many people across the country will be reflecting on the impact that cancer has had on them, on their families and on their communities. Now, one person who's recently shared his own experience is the leader of People Before Profit, Richard Boyd Barrett, who recently received the All Clear, but has spoken about the harsh reality of the treatment and the pretty long road to recovery. And Richard is with me now, looking fit and well.
Thank you, Pat. Yeah, feeling a lot better.
Yeah. Now, did you have a sense of, I'm immortal? Nothing like this will ever happen to me.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you do think you're kind of indestructible.
Bulletproof.
Yeah. That illusion is shattered when you get a diagnosis of cancer. Although, in my case, I mean, right from the off, the doctors were pretty confident that the treatment would work.
Yeah.
That it was 8 to 9 out of 10 chances that it would be successful. And so far, that's turned out to be the case.
And did they share with you how rough it might be?
Yes.
Did they warn you
yes,
of the road ahead?
They did. They said it's going to be tough, but you don't really know what that means until you're actually in it. And they weren't exaggerating when they said
it's tough. You have kind of lingering suspicions and anxiety and worries before you got a diagnosis? I mean, how long in advance were you saying, there's something not quite right?
Yeah, I did. It was during the general election campaign, I first noticed a lump on my neck, so that would have been late October 2023. And I thought, that doesn't look good. It was a sort of swelling, you know,
okay.
But I thought maybe this is going to go away.
Did you Google it?
I didn't, actually.
No?
I didn't. And funny enough, throughout the whole situation, I didn't Google. I didn't sort of second guess the doctors.
Okay.
I just thought,
most people do, and they frighten themselves.
They frighten themselves. And that's exactly why I didn't do it. Because I thought, you can probably find all sorts, and that might be the most helpful thing to do. So no, I listened to the doctors, and it took me till Christmas, the election campaign. I said, I just can't deal with this during the election campaign.
Yeah.
So I went to a GP just before Christmas. And then it took a few weeks because of the Christmas break. And then there was a bit of a mix up, stuff going to the wrong department of James's and whatnot. But in the end, it was, I think it was probably the end of January, I got my first appointment with Professor Conrad Tyman, who put a thing down my throat, and he said, yeah, that doesn't look good. That looks like it's probably cancer. You're going to have to go in and get a biopsy. And
okay.
And I got surgery then as well, because they did actually find it in my tonsil. So they took out the infected tonsil, and then the biopsy said what type of cancer it was. And
did they go back and get the other tonsil?
No, just one. They just took out one. They told me, you're going to have to get chemo and radio.
In which order, or simultaneously?
Simultaneously, yeah. So the surgery took out the sort of initial point of where it was found, but it had spread to the lymph nodes. It hadn't gone any further, thankfully, so I'd caught it relatively early. And they said, yeah, you're going to have to get 35 blasts over a sort of 7-week period
of pretty intense
radio on the throat. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'll be getting chemotherapy. So, yeah, it sort of creeps up in you the first week or two. It doesn't seem too bad. Yeah. You think, this is easy enough. But they sort of warned me about that.
Okay.
And then it really starts to hit you.
And what were the impacts? I mean, was it nausea? Was it tiredness? Was it pain?
All of the above. All of the above. So, I mean, within a week or two, I started to taste, started to go funny. Pain starts. They start to give you sort of painkillers. By the middle of it, you're on heavy morphine. Like, it's because it's a throat. They're burning the hell out of your throat, basically. You know, burning within an inch of your life.
And what about nutrition, food? I mean, were you on liquids or what?
Very quickly, I had moved on to these sort of 4-sip drinks, these sort of yogurty drinks, because you just couldn't swallow food. It became very difficult fairly quickly. That was one of the hardest things about it. And it was on these Scandi shakes, they were called, which are sort of nutrient-enriched milkshakes.
Yeah.
Not very pleasant. There's two flavours I had. So for 4 months, I lived on them three times a day. That's all I could get down. I couldn't get anything else down. So it was tough. And you're wondering all the time, will I ever, ever be able to eat food, enjoy food again? And even to now, it's still sort of lingering. I mean, because there's saliva issues, it burns the hell out of saliva.
But is your taste back?
It's back, yeah. It's considerably better than it was. It's not 100%, and they're not quite clear whether it'll get back to 100%, but it's a hell of a lot better than it was, and it's slowly, slowly improving.
And did they give you any indication as to why it might have happened to you? I know it's a fairly random thing.
What they do know is that it's the HPV virus, which is apparently about 60% of the population have. Yeah. I mean, there's now a vaccination program, but when we were young, there wasn't.
I mean, women get cervical cancer and then tend to get head and neck cancer.
Exactly, yeah. Something I didn't really know. But the fact that it was that also meant that the prognosis was good. If it had, because I have to confess, a smoker. I'm off them now. But I thought, is this to do with smoking? And they were definitive it wasn't. And if I had the version that does come from smoking, I would have been in fairly serious trouble. Okay. So I was lucky. But what they did say is, if the treatment is to be most effective, you should give up cigarettes. And I did. So on day one
What was your attitude to life at that point? I mean, obviously you're a politician and you're used to the rough and tumble of the Doyle Chamber and giving out yards and so on and so forth. How did you feel? Did it all seem a bit irrelevant to you, or did you stay interested?
I did stay interested. But when... I sort of discussed it with the doctors, and I discussed it with kind of my work colleagues, and they said, look, you know, it'll be difficult to work. You won't be able to work through this, you know, because it's very, very intense. So you're better off. And all my work colleagues said, yeah, look, just take the time out and get yourself well. Mm. So that's what I did. But I obviously... insofar as I could, I kept abreast of, you know, listening to you and listening to the current affairs radio programs. But when you're in the height of it, your entire day is taken up with the treatment, with the tablets. I mean, at the height of it, I had boxes of medicine, like painkillers, tablets for this, tablets for that. And, you know, you're in and out of the hospital every single day. You're going to clinics. Yeah, it's pretty intense. And then you're very, very sick. At once the sort of the level of radio activity, I suppose, in your system reaches a high, and then you get the chemo on top of that, you're really pretty flattened. And that goes on for quite a few months.
Okay. Now, you have regular checks, I presume, and everything is great so far?
All good, yeah. I mean, like, there's still inflammation. There's still some side effects, which will linger, various things that, you know, will linger. They slowly improve, whether they'll get back. But the main thing is, for now, the cancer is gone. But they have to check that it doesn't come back. So I have to go in every 3 months.
What was your reflection on the state of the health service, having been through it now in a fairly critical way?
I have to say, they seem to have the cancer services that I dealt with, and I went fully through the public system. It was pretty excellent. Now, there are issues. I mean, one of the issues I sort of encountered, and it is actually an issue, because afterwards I didn't, you know, the doctors didn't want to get too political with me too early, you know what I mean? But when it was all over, they said there's an issue to do with these machines. They're called linear accelerator machines that deliver the radiotherapy. Mm-hmm. And they're way past their sell-by date. Yeah. They're supposed to be replaced every 10 years. And that meant that they broke down sometimes. And this does happen, which is, you know, tough on the patients, because it's hard.
And
going.
The modern machine will be more precise and more robotic, more fueled by AI and all that.
Absolutely. And, you know, because one of the big things is the sort of side effects. The side effects are, you know, there's a lot of them, right? And they are lingering, as I said. And the more precise, the newer machines will reduce significantly the side effects, because it is exactly, as you say, more precise. It targets the cancer, and therefore there's less collateral damage. Mm.
So as Daffodil Day approaches, when a lot of people, their thoughts will turn to cancer, or maybe the loss of a loved one or someone who's going through it, what advice would you give, would you offer?
In terms of going through it?
Yeah, in terms of, you know, dealing with things early, which is something that
definitely
saved your life.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, if you notice anything untoward, get to the doctor quick. There's no point in burying your head in the sand. And if you don't, you there will be consequences, because catching it early is absolutely critical. Yeah. You know, if it had spread past my lymph nodes, I would have been in much more severe trouble. But obviously there is treatment, and, you know, it's amazing now that cancer treatment is advancing. So it isn't a death sentence the way it used to be. And people just need to understand, like, it is, it's now 50% of the population will have a brush with cancer. And apparently the numbers are increasing. So, yeah. You've got to, if you notice anything untoward, get to your doctor. I think that's the key thing. And then listen to the doctors.
Well, before I let you go, Richard, I'd ask you to put on your political hat for a moment. If you were...
If I might just one thing, Pat, before we get on to them. I do just want to thank, again, all of the people who sent me messages. I mean, I was absolutely overwhelmed with the emails, the cards, the texts.
Political friends and foes.
Political friends and foes from right across the spectrum. You know, people who supported you, but people who many of them said, listen, I don't support your politics, but I hope you get well and I'll be glad to see you back and all that sort of stuff. But it was really, really fantastic and very uplifting and undoubtedly helped me through the whole thing.
So the final question is that political one. If you were Micheál Martin heading in to see Mr. Trump on Tuesday, what would you say to Mr. Trump?
Well, look, as you know, Pat, we think he shouldn't go. We don't think we should give him the benefit of sort of the credibility of Patrick's Day celebrating the Irish National Day with the political benefits he derives from that, given what he's doing. I mean, the war in Iran, the arming of Israel continuously despite the genocide against the Palestinians. All of that stuff, we just think it's crazy to legitimize Trump when he's threatening the world. He's now threatening Cuba. He's attacked Venezuela. You know, you can go through the long list of things he's done. He's attacking his own population with these ICE paramilitaries running rampage against immigrants in cities and so on. So I don't really see what's to be gained. But if he's going to do it, I think he should say, stop arming the genocide. How can you, you know, and he needs to say these things very explicitly. I don't believe for a minute, by the way, he's going to do any of this.
But that's what he should be saying.
He should absolutely stop this madness, this war, which is now not only threatening death and destruction across the Middle East, Iran, but is actually impacting on everybody across the world. It's destabilizing the entire global economy. You know, it's just a disaster. And it's bringing us to a dangerous place. And I should say there will be an anti-war protest about trying to defend Irish neutrality, because for us, part of this is also linked to the militarisation of Europe and what we would see as, you know, the triple lock stuff dismantling our neutrality. So there's a protest this Wednesday outside the Dáil to defend Irish neutrality. We don't think US troops should be going through Shannon while the US is prosecuting this disastrous war, and with all the stuff that's happened to the Palestinians in Gaza.
Richard Boyd Barrett of People Before Profits, thank you very much, Richard, for joining us in studio today.
The Pat Kenny Show, Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.